Hi, everyone. Welcome to America Trends. Thank you for being with us for this hour here on the U2 America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. Glad to have you along wherever you're at. I'm Amy Fuller, and here's what's ahead. We have a gentleman named Tony Grundin. He is going to talk to us about how music education has changed, the new trends, because, you know, we used to learn instruments. Did you learn an instrument when you were in school? They started you when you were fourth grade, and they just handed you something, and then you went from there. Now it's all digital, right? You just push buttons. So we're going to see where everything stands. Should be interesting to talk to Tony. Jeffrey Mark, our ultimate showman, who is the author of several books on some of America's leading ladies, is going to be here to talk about Lee Ratzewell. She died over the weekend. She is the younger sister of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. Cousin to Grey Gardens ladies, Big and Little Edie, if you know them. And he has some one-on-one stories about Lee, because Jeffrey has stories about everybody. So we will talk to him. And then Barry Nussbaum from the American Truth Project here to talk about some of the political headlines of the day. And we do start with that. They ignored the basic standards of journalism. And now, lawyers for the family of Nicholas Sandman have filed a lawsuit against the Washington Post. Can you imagine what it feels like to be his parents, what he went through? Just so protective of your son. Anyway, they filed a lawsuit against the Washington Post. They are seeking $250 million in both compensatory and punitive damages. Sandman, who is 16, is a Covington Catholic High junior at the center of a controversy after he was just depicted all over social media, like you saw right here, along with Native American protester Nathan Phillips. All kinds of media claimed that the high schooler was taunting Phillips. The lawsuit claims that the Post wrongfully targeted and bullied Nicholas because he was white and Catholic and wearing a MAGA cap on a school field trip in January for the March for Life in D.C. Attorneys say it is their first lawsuit on behalf of the family, and additional ones will follow. President Trump, over 300 fake hate crimes in the past 2 years, and the media retracts almost none of them. Huge, just such a huge discrepancy in journalism. President Trump did tweet his support this morning, and there's what he said. The Post ignored basic journalistic standards, so that. Okay, also in the news, a last-minute phone call may have saved the Empire actor Jussie Smollett from potentially being indicted. The actor claimed he was a victim of a racist and homophobic attack as he walked home in the middle of the night in Chicago. Two brothers have now told police Smollett paid them to stage the assault. And we're going to move on right now to Sidney Poitier, an American treasure, who turns 92 today. And boy, did he really just break barriers. He turns 92. He was the first black performer to win Best Actor in the Academy Awards. Neat to see the video, classic video from 64 of this groundbreaking win. Take a look.
Well, we're in the adrenaline section, this knee-knocking hour here, and I won't delay anymore to present the award for the Best Actor, the very brilliant Academy Award-winning actress of last year, Miss Anne Bancroft.
The nominees for the best performance by an actor are Albert Finney in Tom Jones, Richard Harris in This Sporting Life, Rex Harrison in Cleopatra, Paul Newman in Her, Sidney Poitier in Lilies of the Field. The winner is Sidney Poitier in Lilies.
Because it is a long journey to this moment, I am naturally indebted to countless numbers of people, principally among whom are Ralph Nelson, James Poe, William Barrett, Martin Baum, and of course, the members of the Academy. For all of them, all I can say is a very special thank you.
Anne Bancroft walking off Sidney Poitier. He turns 92 today, an American treasure. And he broke those racial barriers. What you just saw was from April 13th, 1964. He became the first black performer to win the Best Actor at the Academy Awards. What it was like back then is very hard to imagine for some, but very important at the time and for all times to come. That moment, what he did, and just need to see that classic video. So happy birthday to Sidney Poitier. And he's been trending. So we salute him. Hey, a lot has changed in recent years as far as entertainment, and we're going to actually switch to music right now. Back when I was in school, there were instruments to learn about, and now you can push buttons and sound really darn good. And so we're going to talk about that sort of trend with a gentleman named Tony Grund from MakeBeatsNewYork.com. He has 20 years of classical training and 20 years as a producer and DJ. He brings an interesting twist to the world of music education. He believes that everyone who wants to make music should be able to, and he uses all the modern stuff to make it happen. Hey, Tony, we're so glad you could join us for America Trends.
Hey, thank you.
So let's pretend it's been 20 or so years since I was in college or high school. Let's just pretend that, right? How have things changed to where people around my age or your age, I'm trying to see how you probably are a little younger than I am. How have things changed that would sort of blow our minds?
So back then what you'd be doing is you'd be learning piano, violin, clarinet, French horn, something like that. whereas now you can still learn those instruments, of course, but now you have the options of learning how to make music with computers and using alternative forms of input devices and playing styles and things like that. It's very different from how it was when I grew up, even.
And it's gotten to be so well developed that I don't know whether it was, I mean, it was really the early 2000s when I sort of realized, you know, you have the Mac computers that can do so much, and you see people doing things and the way it's gotten to at this point is it really sounds genuine. It doesn't sound like a synthesizer. It doesn't sound fake. It sounds really, really good. So what do you think of that? I mean, I'm sure the progress is great. People probably miss that everyone had, you know, learning a certain thing and developing that talent. But if it makes great music, So where do you do music? Are you an educator, a music educator who teaches all the new and improved things?
Yes. So I teach music production and I teach engineering and mixing and stuff like that. People using software like Pro Tools, Logic, Ableton Live, such as like that. And then really like getting into the engineering side of things where nowadays what you can do is you can actually start everything yourself and kind of build it up and make it sound professional and realistic. As you said, a lot of film scores that you see these days are like a hybrid of real musicians and then synthesizers and keyboards and stuff like that.
It's pretty exciting. Do you like adding a little bit of both?
I do. Yeah. I mean, coming from a classical music background.
Oh, you did?
Totally. I played French horn growing up. I did that all through college. But then after college, I kind of got deeper into working professionally as a producer. And a lot of the music and a lot of the musicians I've worked with is kind of this hybrid between this kind of classical style and this modern electronic style, using beats and machines to create and twist the sounds, but also using traditional instruments to kind of make it feel something that, like, we know.
Yeah, there's something about that. And there's something about live music and those instruments. But, you know, as technology goes, it just, like I said, gets better and better, and you can't really tell. Do people even need to read music anymore?
So that's an interesting thing. It's an interesting question because, you know, we've always had different forms of music writing. For example, you know, pianos have there's staves and different like staffs and stuff like that. But then you have guitar players who have always had like tablature, and it's a very different writing style. They've even made writing for DJ scratching. There have been like solos written for that, like actually written out on paper. But if you take that one step further, it's not even like how we read music, but how we input music as well. You know, you have a traditional piano keyboard, but nowadays we have things like the Ableton Live Push, which is just a bunch of buttons, but it can still input the sounds and input the notes in a new way. It's really cool.
It sounds cool. It sounds like something would be fun to play around with. And I see here the Ableton.com, Ableton Live. Is that something you work with and something you teach?
Yeah, so Ableton is a company that makes a program called Live, and it's been around for since like 2000, 2001, something like that. And it's basically software where you can take samples and music and put them all together and make your own music using keyboards and stuff like that. And put it all together in a really interesting and new way that's very different from some of the older pieces of software like Pro Tools or Logic.
You know, I just have to get a grasp. When did you first know? What year was it when you knew I want to go into music? This is really something special to me.
In 1990.
Who were your influences? I mean, does it go back to Gershwin and things like that? Or is it someone like, Michael Jackson? Who knows?
Yeah, all those. I mean, I started playing piano when I was about four. I was really into classical music. My mother played piano, and I was really into classical music. And then I got into like classic rock, like Led Zeppelin and stuff like that. And then I kind of grew up in the 80s. So people like you said, Michael Jackson, and you said Gershwin, like these are people that I really love.
For sure.
And then I discovered electronic music. All that's like, you know, Michael Jackson's very electronic as well. But I started to discover like industrial bands like Skinny Puppy that made these really strange, weird sounds I'd never heard before. And I remember when I was like 15 and I was in Georgia and I was driving and I put on this tape that somebody had given me, and the sounds were just mind blowing. I'd never heard anything like it. And that's when I was thought to myself, yeah, I want to do electronic music.
You know what? There's so many great genres. You got Penguin Cafe Orchestra, you made me think of, which you probably know of. Tony, we're short on time, but I really want you to come back and talk more about where it's all going. And how can we reach you? What are you offering? Can people buy your services online?
Yeah, they can find me at the website, makebeatsnewyork.com.
Tony Grund is his name. We really appreciate it. And Tony, come back anytime to America Trends, okay?
Right. Thank you.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller. Thank you for being with us for this hour. You're watching the U2 America TV network or listening on Biz Talk Radio, and we're glad to have you all here. Coming up from the American Truth Project, Barry Nussbaum, our friend of the show, always having a handle. Well, you can handle the truth because you have visited American Truth Project. Go to that website. He's also active on social media, but he's going to chat with us about some of the political topics of the day. But first, we've had a few losses lately, and the younger sister of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, Lee Radziwill, died over the weekend, 85 years old. She was a princess. So just such a lovely picture. And cousins of Little Edie Beale, if you follow them, the whole Grey Gardens thing. And, you know, our friend of the show, Jeffrey Mark, the ultimate showman, we call him, and he's the author of Ella, his latest book, a biography of the legendary Ella Fitzgerald, also wrote the book on Ethel Merman, completely just historic, legendary Broadway a diva, and also Lucille Ball. And so he marks the lives of these people, and name anybody, and Jeffrey seems to have a story about them. So this hour we are joined by Jeffrey. We're going to remember a little bit of Lee Radziwill. And Jeffrey, welcome back.
Hi, beautiful.
Oh, hi, gorgeous. Look at you in your purple and you always dress up for us. It's so exciting.
You know, accessorization.
Oh, I love that. You know, someday we'll get a full, we'll see what kind of boots you're wearing and all kinds of things. But of course you had dinner with Lee Radziwill and Truman Capote one time and had to tell us about it on the aftermath of her death. It's just, it's amazing. And 85 good years, right?
Well, 85 full years. This is a woman who really lived up to her press. She had an incredible breeding, incredible education, a princess, what any woman I think would aspire to. And she has a sister who's one of the most famous women in history. And yes, I have a story. I am tilting my head because I'm trying to hide the lights behind me to not blind you folks at home.
Oh, you actually know what? It's not giving us a big backlash. It just sort of looks like, well, it looks like what would we would expect from Jeffrey Mark's home. Spotlights everywhere.
So this story that I'm going to tell you goes back way back to the 1970s.
Okay, for just a second, can you explain who Truman Capote is for our audience? You know, so our audience is a savvy audience, but they're younger people. They don't know everyone in history. But Truman Capote is an interesting figure to know, right?
He was, and there was more than just Truman at this dinner.
Oh, my
gosh. So I will go through the whole cast of characters. I'm just going to tell you in 30 seconds how I got there.
Let's do it. Now, we've got a few minutes, so go ahead and expand your story, because you are a great storyteller.
Ma'am.
That's why we love having you on.
I was working at the Playboy Club in New York in a show that was produced and directed by Peter Jackson. And Peter also had another show in another nightclub in New York at the time. And Peter had a companion, shall we say, who was there because Peter took really good care of this companion. But every once in a while, this companion couldn't make it. If that happened, Peter took me to dinner. And P.J. Clark's was the place in Manhattan back then.
Sure.
If you wanted to see and be seen, you went to P.J. Clark's.
Okay, so wait a minute. Jeffrey, I just have a question because I love P.J. Clark's in Manhattan. Was it one place then and now it's there are multiple locations?
There was only one on the east side of New York. That was it.
Right by Carnegie Hall? Is that the one?
No. This is on the east side.
Oh.
Kind of close to Carnegie Hall, but on the east side of New York City.
Hmm.
And
great
there
place.
Were lines. You could never get in unless you were somebody. That's how it was like going to Studio 54.
Oh, gosh.
It was that difficult.
That's
to
a whole
in.
Other segment someday, Jeffrey, right?
I was there. I don't know if we can tell my stories about being at Studio 54 on the air.
We'll get the bleepers out.
If you want
out.
Them, we'll do a whole other show about that. But Peter and I got in the limo and went to P.J. Clark's, and there was 50, 60 people trying to get in. And they said to him, because he was really well-known in New York City, I was a young cabaret artist, not yet a celebrity, but a little well-known. And they turned to him and said, friends of yours are here, and there's room at their table if you don't mind joining them. So we joined them, and when I got to them was Andy Warhol.
Oh, no. Come
was
on.
An amazing person, but iconic in the art world in the 1960s and 1970s.
Boy.
He's the guy that did the Campbell's soup can.
The soup cans.
The
yeah,
Marilyn
you don't know Monroe Andy Warhol.
Photos.
Sure.
So he was enormously famous at that moment. Truman Capote. Truman was an author and a writer. He'd written books. He'd written Broadway plays. He'd written films. He was enormously famous, and he was just as famous for the very ribald, cutting comments he would make about other celebrities as he was for what he actually wrote.
And by the way, to be in his midst, every year he threw a year. Was it a black and white party? He threw every
yes.
year, and people were just dying to get in. The elite of the elite of the Manhattanites, Truman Capote.
So I'm there with those two. And then there is the princess and her sister and Peter Jackson and I.
Wait, the prince?
Well,
are you talking about Lee Raswell?
Yes.
And her
yes,
sister?
Ma'am. And Mrs. Onassis.
Jackie O was there.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So I didn't know you yet. But in my head, I'm thinking, okay, remember every word that's being said tonight, because you're going to be repeating this story for the rest of your life. You know something? I've never been so disappointed in my life.
What?
Andy was stoned on I don't know what. I don't recognize the drug he took that made him just unresponsive. I mean, his face was not in his food, but he couldn't answer questions. He couldn't it seemed like he wasn't sure where he was or what he was doing. So that was Andy. Then next to Andy over here is Truman. Truman is only interested in discussing Peter Jackson's paid companion and whatever physical attributes he may or may not have had.
Jeffrey, I can't believe it, but I'm down to a minute. I'm so sorry.
So the point of the story is these guys are off on their own having completely inappropriate behavior. Now, I am with the princess and Mrs. Onassis.
I can't believe it.
Total class.
Yeah.
Mrs. Onassis was wearing a cowl neck pullover sweater, a velour pleated skirt and boots that any good secretary could buy if she was shopping properly. Mm. And the two ladies tried to show an interest in my career, who I was. Why was I sitting there? Politeness, grace, true charm. But nobody said anything interesting, including me. What an evening.
It's hard to miss stuff like that.
To sit with these people and realize they were as interesting or as boring as everybody else.
See, and that itself is just quite a little nugget, right, Jeffrey?
It's an interesting thing to learn about people.
Huh, I'll be darned. Well, I'm telling you, you came to the studio. Jeffrey Mark is our friend of the show. He was here a couple weeks ago, and he did performances for us. Go to ytaclub.com to see them. They're uploaded on demand, and it was such a treat. Jeffrey, we can't wait till the next time you're back.
I'm going to come back and sing for you again.
Anytime, anytime. Truman Capote and Lee Raxwell as we head to break. Thank you, Jeffrey. Love you. Welcome back to America Trends. Glad to have you with us. Our friend Barry Nussbaum is with the American Truth Project, and he comes on from time to time to talk to us about the political headlines of the day. He keeps track of all these things. A few things we're going to try to fit in today. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and that big Amazon deal that fell through, not coming to New York because of, well, we'll see. And the cost to Americans, to you, for illegal aliens. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and also the government border deal, the national emergency that we will, it's been declared, but there are some 16 states led by California trying to stop, this coalition trying to stop President Trump from getting the $8 billion he wants to build a border wall to keep us all safe. This is what he ran on. This is why we voted him in, why we wanted him for the job. And Barry Nussbaum, welcome back to America Trends.
Great to be with you, Amy, as usual.
So what has caught your eye this week as far as politics is concerned, all the political headlines?
I think the biggest story that is going to have the biggest ramifications for all Americans for years to come is the declaration of national emergency to facilitate President Trump funding the border barrier on the southern border. The part that is really missing out of the news is the fact that there have been over 50 of these declarations since the law was first passed in the 70s. Every single president has declared a national emergency.
And about 32 that we are still under yet today since about 1979. So we're still under these things. So when the national media, the mainstream press, tries to make it seem like it's some amazing thing, you know, there's a lot to learn about what's going on in politics. We can't pay attention to everything, but we are trying to tell you what is going on, and you may just not find the truth on CNN, right?
Well, the really sad part is that is astoundingly true. There are over 30 still in effect, and I'll bet you any amount of money, you or any of your viewers and me before I did the research could name more than one of them.
So what are they?
50 have been declared. I mean, things that, and you know, when you research, they all kind of make sense, you know. After 9/11, Bush declared a national emergency relating to Islamic terrorism. Obama declared national emergencies. Generally, they have involved threats from other countries, and they have been facilitated by a declaration from the president that says it's in the best national security interest of the country. The part that's ironic is many of these, and I mean several dozen of them, have been declared to establish, maintain, and pay for barriers between countries to protect the sovereignty of those third world nations, courtesy of you and me and our fellow several hundred million American taxpayers. And the great goofball story that's hidden now is that the southern border is being infiltrated by thousands of people a day. I always invite people to go to the border and see for themselves if they can do it. I did it, and you really get your eyes open. And what President Trump says is, look, I ran on the platform that I'm going to close the border, which means everybody that comes in through a legal port of entry, fills out the paperwork, makes the application, pass the test, just like you're supposed to.
Wait, they're supposed to come in legally and go through a process just like we always have since the beginning of when we got our country established and when they did it on Ellis Island to make sure we could come here as viable citizens and also not have diseases? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like when my parents came here after World War II.
God bless them.
And they had to study. I remember being in high school, if I wanted to know anything about civics, especially American presidents, especially things like the Declaration of Independence or the Bill of Rights, I would go to one of my parents who would tell me in very accented English exactly what I needed to know because they had to learn it to become American citizens. It's really sad that somehow along the way during our generation, that's fallen out. So now President Trump does what he promised to do, and the 50 odd national security declarations that have been made aren't in the news, Amy, and there's a lot of them to protect other countries. But somehow, for some reason, a few billion dollars to protect America is a national crisis. And then you get the nutcases that come out of the woodwork and say, you know what? Not only do we not want to expand the wall because it's racist and anti-American and anti-immigrant and all kinds of other cockamamie phrases.
Cockamamie is the right word.
The wall that's already there and open up the borders. Yikes!
No. It's just, and again, I say, the Democrats are trying to, are they really trying to make us believe that they think the walls don't work? Because what they really want are people to come in and vote for them. And it's just the strangest thing that you would forfeit national security and forfeit trying to have the best for your country because you hate Donald Trump and because you want the votes. But I suppose, you know, they have to do whatever to maintain themselves and survive. But Barry, as far as national emergencies go, besides the people who sneak in every day to the United States of America and the ones that we allow in because we grant them asylum or the ones who apply through the process and do the right thing and we allow in, which, by the way, if you've come here through that process, you're probably at the front of the line saying, don't let illegals in. Let them do what I did. I came here legally. I didn't come here carrying a Honduran flag and damning our president and damning our country. But just this latest caravan, the one that's just south of Eagle Pass, Texas, right now, some 1,800, and they came up and they tried to go to Eagle Pass instead of under San Diego because it's more porous, it's easier to sneak in. There are now, this is the update as of today, 25 members of MS-13. This is what Mexican officials are telling us. 25 members of MS-13. And if you've not heard of it or you haven't looked up what they do, look it up, viewers. You'll lose your lunch. You won't be able to sleep. These are bad hombres. And 25 of them have been busted and sent back in this caravan alone. Oh, the Democrats will tell you it's just a few. But then there's that Skittles thing. Barry, if you have a package of Skittles and you know one's poisonous, are you going to eat them all just because only one is poisonous? So that's the update there. And that's why this you could say this is, in fact, a national emergency.
If you're the family, Amy, that loses a son or a daughter to a brutal crime, you're the one Skittle. And that means that one person who came in was the one that destroyed your family. Look, the job of law enforcement is to protect the citizens based on the laws passed by the Congress. This goofball statement that comes out of, for example, the California senator, Kamala Harris, that calls ICE the same as the Ku Klux Klan.
That's ridiculous.
Or Ocasio-Cortez, our favorite congresswoman from New York, who wants to defund ICE. doesn't realize these are national laws passed by the national representatives of the American people to state the laws of how you get into the country. ICE is down there doing their job, way outmanned, way underfunded, and outgunned by people who literally cut your head off as an example to other people to let them do what they want to do. MS-13 may be the worst gang ever to infiltrate the country. And if there's a couple, if there's one, keep everybody out until everybody follows the rules. Because if that one person gets in and comes to your home or my home, oh my gosh, the devastation is terrifying.
And people, you know, have, I'm sorry, Barry, people, I'm going to keep you over for the next segment, but so many angel families that we've heard from recently have lived the very thing you're saying. Coming right back after this with Barry Nussbaum. Back with America Trends. Does President Trump, as Commander-in-Chief, have the right to declare a national emergency? Now, this is what's different. What Democrats will tell you about the one that has now been declared out of the 50 or so in history and the 32 that we are under right now since 1979 is that this national emergency appropriates money. The others have not. Congress is supposed to appropriate money. But the president has some powers, too. That's why he's the president. We're talking to Barry Nussbaum of the American Truth Project, who says that he has a valid, Barry says Trump has a valid reason to declare this national emergency. And we've been talking about some of the ways that he does because of our insecure border wall, the caravans that are coming here, the proof that we hear from, oh, gosh, representatives in Honduras saying that there are huge, momentous pushes behind these caravans to come here and destabilize America and its partners. So the threat from within, and Democrats just want to allow it. Barry, what do you say about that?
Well, every national emergency declaration in the past, Amy, has entailed a federal expenditure of funds. The argument that's going to be made in the courts is that Congress already opined what the right number is. In other words, the $1.3 billion they put in the last funding bill. I think what the president's lawyers are going to argue is that the money the president is going to spend, which is up to $8 billion, so $6.7 billion from other sources, has already been appropriated in different cases for national security, drug interdiction, discretionary funds that have never been spent, and so on. But so in other words, he's not pulling new money. He's reallocating existing funds.
But he has said, I'm sorry to interrupt, Barry, but he has said that he talked to many generals in our military, and they said, do it. This is a better expenditure. This is a better resource for our money to take it and build this wall than what we had already appropriated it for. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's also an interesting point. And you can add to that analysis, Amy, the fact that what we spend as Americans on illegal infiltration of this country in education, in healthcare, in law enforcement, in treatment, and so on, is maybe 20 times or 30 times what the expenditure will be to keep these people out and force them to come through the doorway instead of climbing in through an open window or digging a tunnel under the wall, or in most cases, just walking across a non-border. That's why I really urge people who can get there, who really want to know, to stop believing talking points from the left or the right and drive to Arizona or to Texas or to California east of San Ysidro. And you'll see in many places, and this is shocking, the border between the United States and Mexico could be infiltrated by a kindergartner or younger. And in other words, there is no barrier. So all you people that lock your doors at night and lock your windows and lock your cars because you want to feel safe from people that you don't want taking your stuff or, God forbid, doing something to your family, this is the same thing. We're just locking the door to the country because you know what? When people come here, they earn the right. They don't get the right. They earn it, meaning it's a privilege, to stay. And they have to do certain things or they can't come and be part of our culture. America is not and nor has ever been a place that you can break into and make it okay. I will never change my opinion. And I think you're right. You said it in the last segment. People that are in favor of open borders or no more walls, and they call them racist or whatever, are really saying, I just hope every one of these illegals comes in and votes in my party so my party gets more stuff for people that believe like I do. And I don't think, politically, that's the American system.
And we won't even get into people, Democrats and people on that side will say, well, more of the, you say all these illegals commit these crimes, more Americans commit crimes. But look at the percentage that are in federal prisons right now who are illegals. And by the way, the way we set up the United States of America, our infrastructure, our police, our we take a census to see who's here. And by that, we commit our infrastructure. So we do deal with the people who are here. We don't need other criminals coming here that, by the way, are unaccounted for. So that's a whole other topic. But Barry, you did send me some numbers about the cost to Americans and state by state today. You told me, and these numbers blew my mind.
Yeah, the cost is many, many times, Amy, what is being built on the wall. It's an extraordinary expenditure that each state spends on social services and policing because of the problems brought here. People bring diseases that we're not familiar with. People bring pregnancies to drop their babies here. People bring criminals in. They bring in crime. They commit crimes. Look, a couple weeks ago, I believe it was the largest fentanyl bust in the history of the United States. There were over 100 million lethal doses. Can you imagine
it was bad,
if it got into drug distribution, how many deaths there would be? It was interdicted by ICE at the border, thank goodness. Because if they didn't do their job, which is to protect our country at a border that's definable and should be protected, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, over the next year probably would have died.
The fentanyl bust was enough to kill people in six states, they said, when it came through. That stuff is deadly. Police have to wear gloves. If they touch it, they're going to be hospitalized. So, Barry, so much to touch on in that, but I've got under a minute with you, and we've got to go over Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, new congresswoman from New York, and suddenly Amazon, huge project that could have come to New York and created jobs and all kinds of good stuff. They're out of there because they don't like some of the policies.
She was dancing in the streets and they were popping champagne that they killed 25,000 high paying jobs, many of which would have paid New Yorkers over $100,000 a year, not to mention the billions that Amazon was going to invest in infrastructure. And the reason she killed it, there was a tax break, meaning out of all the money Amazon would have earned, they would have given a little bit less in taxes in exchange for spending billions in New York and employing 25,000 people. This is the beauty of socialism. She should be congratulated because now people know what she really thinks. And I hope they think about that next time there's an election. Do they really want this kind of economic insanity in their borough? I would hope the answer is no.
She's in office 6 weeks and already lost that many jobs. Very special. We're out of time, but I want to mention Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know, we were asking, where is she? And now there's a grainy photo that you showed me, Barry, of her showing up at an airport she wasn't in a wheelchair even. She was being walked in, and she was at a meeting for the Supreme Court, of which she's a member, obviously, Friday. So it looks like we have seen her. We pray for her and glad she's well, and we're glad they show. Hey, Barry, American Truth Project, can you come back soon and see us?
I would love to. Anyone can check us out at findberry.com.
Too much cholesterol in the blood causes plaque buildup in the arteries. Fiber has been scientifically proven to lower cholesterol. Created by Dr. J. Robert Cade, the inventor of Gatorade, Cholesterade promotes probiotic function, supports digestive health, contains all natural flavors, and is gluten-free. In the original case study, participants saw a reduction in bad cholesterol by more than 20%. Cholesterade is the ultimate all-natural digestive aid.
Oh my, you're a nifty boy! βλέπω για καλό χρόνο σήμερα.
Thank you for being with us for America Trends. Very glad to have you along. And thank you to our guest, Tony Grund, who is here to talk about the new way music education presents itself in America today. Yeah, it's not just playing the recorder that we had to learn in fourth grade and then on from there. You can push buttons and just make amazing music, and it sounds really good. So I loved having Tony on, hope to have him back soon. Jeffrey Mark, the ultimate showman, author of Ella, talking about Lee Radziwill, who we lost over the weekend at the age of 85, sister of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And then Barry Nussbaum of the American Truth Project, our friend of the show. We always love to have him come on to talk about the political headlines of the day. We talked about the national emergency, the cost to Americans of illegal aliens, and that big Amazon deal that fell through in New York. And so there it is. And we're going to have more great shows for you this week and hope you will come right back with us. Finally tonight, a look at what the Apollo 11 mission. This is trending. The mission to land on the moon led by Commander Neil Armstrong and pilot Buzz Aldrin. There's a new movie coming out to theaters March 7th. And it looks really great. It's got a lot of like genuine footage. And we're going to give you a look and a listen now at Apollo 11.
I'd like to know what you feel as far as the responsibilities of representing mankind on this trip.
That's relatively difficult to answer. It's a job that we collectively said that was possible and we could do. And of course, the nation itself is backing us. So we just sincerely hope that we measure up to that.
The Apollo program was designed to get two Americans to the lunar surface and back again to Earth safely. The enormity of this event is something that only history will be able to judge.
Apollo 11 has very simply been given the mission of carrying men to the moon, landing them there, and bringing them safely back.
I can feel it in here when it's
okay, I was like, the color is gone.